Well, hey, Lore.
Hey, John.
You see what I did there? I didn't even say your full name. I just said a short little bit of your name because that's what we're going to do on this week's podcast. It's just like a little short update of a couple of big news events.
Okay, I get it. Yes, we're going to do a mini podcast this week. Sean isn't here, but we had to podcast because two huge things happened this week. The Seventh Circuit finally ruled in a case that we've been waiting more than 3 years for their decision on this voting case. And we also got some pretty important news about the voter purge case from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So a mini pod with Lore and Joe. Joe and Lore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the WPR pod. I'm Joe K. Will.
And I'm Lore Y. Sounds like a Star Trek name.
Yeah, just go with it. Anyway, this week, a mini podcast about some big election-related judicial decisions. All right, so the clock is ticking. Little tiny podcast, but we got some big things to talk about. Which one of these court rulings do we want to talk about first?
Well, let's talk about this Seventh Circuit ruling first, because like I said in the intro, this is something we've been waiting for more than 3 years. So the time has come. We're finally able to talk about this decision. Sean is not here. I feel a little guilty talking about this thing we've waited for so long without him. But you got to do what you got to do, right? What can we do?
Yeah, he's on vacation, though. He's taken some time, so yeah. He's missing out.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to be a part of the fun.
It's Christmas morning. It happened. We're here. We've got some presents to open, and sorry, Sean.
So do you want to unwrap what happened in this case?
Yeah. So just kind of a primer, I guess, on what the case is. This is one that I covered back in 2016. It's a case brought by One Wisconsin Institute, and they basically argued that a fairly large number, more than a dozen Wisconsin election laws passed under the Republican-controlled legislature since 2011, were discriminatory against minorities and young people, specific kind of demographic groups. And a federal judge, a federal district judge, ruled in their favor. And this was a pretty big deal. I mean, he threw out parts of Wisconsin's voter ID law. He threw out some restrictions on early voting. So it was a pretty sizable shift in how Wisconsin's voting laws were implemented in 2016. And so this appeal was something that everybody was watching really closely, and we've had to wait a really long time for the decision to come out. And it really hasn't disappointed in terms of the impact of the decision. I mean, we waited a long time for it, and it's a big decision. It reverses kind of a lot of what the district judge decided. So what has happened with this decision is that kind of the nuts and bolts are Wisconsin's limits on early voting in terms of kind of having a set amount of time that you can vote in-person absentee before an election is going to be restricted again. That time frame that had been kind of pared down in state law to a specific number of days before the election, specifically 13 days before the election, had been thrown out. Now we're going to go back to a world where those 13 days are the only days that you can vote in-person absentee before an election. And that's a really big deal in places like Madison and Milwaukee. Other big stuff, kind of big takeaways, and then we can get into the nitty-gritty, is that people can no longer request an absentee ballot by and receive it by email or fax, which is, you know, something obviously that some people chose to do. A lot of people do that by mail, we know, especially after the spring. And then kind of a big thing that the court decided to uphold that I think is notable from the lower court's decision is that college students can use expired IDs as forms of identification at the polls. So that's kind of one of the wins for the liberal groups that brought the case in this appellate court decision that kind of overwhelmingly is something that they're not super happy about.
Yeah, I was going to say sort of like the top line news here is that the court's ruling mostly seems to favor conservatives. They're the ones who are mostly celebrating this ruling because it sort of put back in place restrictions that they had come up with. But then there were a couple little facets to the ruling that came down on the side of what liberals were asking for.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that, you know, kind of the wins for liberals are that that student ID policy, being able to use the expired student IDs, that's a big deal and something that they've obviously pushed for. There was another requirement about residency status, citizenship, and dorm lists. That was a requirement that had been put in place in state law that is also not going to continue to be upheld. So there are some victories there for the liberal groups that brought this case way back when. But I think the biggest focus from this appellate court ruling is really these early voting changes. I mean, people have talked a lot about early voting, and I think it's very safe to say that early voting is an even bigger deal right now, kind of in the age of COVID-19, right? I mean, we're talking about people voting by mail in unprecedented numbers, kind of the time frame required for that in certain cases. So we've already had this increased focus on early voting and voting by mail, and now we have this decision that is changing the time frames in which people can physically go to a polling place in their community before Election Day and cast a ballot. And liberal groups are saying this is an incredibly important thing that Wisconsin election officials offer during the time of COVID-19, because the more people that go early, the more people that go in, say, 6 days before Election Day to cast their ballot in person, if that's the way they want to do it, if they don't want to vote by mail, that spreads out, you know, the population over time. You're having less big groups in one place, less lines on Election Day. And those lines on Election Day are certainly things that people want to mitigate these days. So I would say, while it's absolutely true that there were some good things for the liberal groups in this appellate decision, I think the biggest takeaway is something that they're not happy about at all.
Yeah, it seems like definitely this ruling coming right now is shaping what the November election will look like, giving us a better idea of how things are going to go. One other thing that I think is interesting, real quick, to point out about this ruling was what the panel of judges said about who these restrictions impact. Mm-hmm. The folks who brought the challenge to these restrictions were essentially arguing that they disproportionately affect minority groups, that it makes it harder for them to vote. But the court disagreed with that this week. They said that they didn't see race as being an issue with these rules. They said that, if anything, politics is what the restrictions affect, that the rules could theoretically make it easier for people of a certain ideological or political background, but the court said that they see that as okay, based on precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court, that you can make changes to voting rules to benefit a specific party.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this comes back to a U.S. Supreme Court gerrymandering case that is incredibly important in Wisconsin, and one we've talked about a lot in Wisconsin, because it was something that affected our case that went to the Supreme Court about Wisconsin's political maps. And essentially, the Supreme Court said we can't rule on the basis of partisan gerrymandering of maps that are meant to benefit one political party over another. And that sort of trickled down to this case. And essentially what these justices said on the federal appellate court was, it's okay for lawmakers to pass laws that benefit their party. It's okay that You know, these voting restrictions benefit Republicans and are to the detriment of Democrats, because it's not our place to get in the way of that. That's kind of lawmakers' prerogative. And I thought one of the really interesting parts of the decision basically said, there's this cycle that can exist. You know, one party passes laws when they're in power, another party comes into power and undoes them or puts things back to the way they were before the previous party was in, and kind of, you know, the circle of life continues, for lack of a better metaphor. So,
is this where we slip in a Lion King reference where right. Sean isn't here because true. He hasn't ever seen that movie?
Yeah, that's a good point. I do tend to do that, don't I, when Sean's not here? But yeah, I just thought that was such a fascinating part of this ruling. I think another thing that's interesting while we're talking about just kind of the specific language that they used and some of their arguments, they said multiple times Wisconsin has very accommodating voting laws. They compared Wisconsin to other states in terms of, like, you know, offering in-person early voting at all. Some states don't do that. They talked about how Wisconsin allows registration at the polls on election day. That's not something that's available everywhere. And interestingly, they said at one point, you know, early voting in and of itself is not a fundamental right. That's not something that people are entitled to in Wisconsin. So I think this is something that we're obviously going to be talking about more and more as we lead up to November, because everybody is so incredibly focused on who makes it to the polls, how difficult it is for people to make it to the polls. And that's a conversation that we have all the time, right? But it's so much more heightened now because of COVID, and we're introducing these new changes just months before we're about to have this huge election. And so it's just a really interesting time for this decision that we've waited so long for to drop.
Well, that seems like a good segue into the other major court decision that we had this week, which could also potentially affect how things look for voters in November. And that is an order that came out from the Wisconsin Supreme Court about the voter purge case that's sort of been working its way through the system, having to do with a whole bunch of names that could potentially be thrown off the voter rolls.
Yeah. So should we do a quick recap of what this case is before we get into what the case
who,
did?
People who listen to the podcast already are clearly familiar with this. But yeah, we should probably do a mini little recap.
Well, it all starts with... I could go back. So basically what this case has to do with is... This group of now about 130,000 people who got this mailing from the Wisconsin Elections Commission asking whether they had moved in Wisconsin or out of state. And the case hinges on how quickly people respond to that mailing. So the conservative group that brought the case, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, says that state law requires that people respond to this mailing asking whether they've moved within 30 days. And if they don't respond, then they're removed from the voter rolls. Under current State Elections Commission policy, people have up to 2 years to respond to this before they're taken off the rolls, unless they register to vote somewhere else. People are sent this mailing after they're flagged by ERIC, the Electronic Registration Information Center, as I'm sure everyone knows. Which is,
so we have Will bringing a case involving Eric.
Exactly. So essentially what's going down here is, you know, Will saying that the Elections Commission is misusing the information from Eric, if we're going to draw a cartoon or something. But they want people to be removed from the rolls if they haven't responded quickly to this mailing, or if they haven't registered at a different address in Wisconsin. So this has gone through kind of a winding process to end up at the Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court agreed to take it early last month. And so now we're just kind of at the phase of normally a phase that's kind of boring, really, of setting deadlines and briefing schedules and things like that. But
hey, that's fascinating to me.
Right? It's to each their own. But it's definitely, I think, more exciting than it normally is with this case anyway.
And why is that?
So basically what happened this week is this order that came out clarified what the scheduling is going to look like for this case. And people have been watching that really closely because Will had asked the court to either bypass oral arguments entirely and just rule on the briefings in the case, or to expedite oral arguments because they're saying, hey, we've got a huge election coming up. This has to do with the integrity of the election, people who are on the voter rolls in the state, and we need you to make a decision quickly. The court's order this week said, no thanks. We're going to do it the way we normally do it. And we're not going to hear oral arguments. We are going to hear them, but we're not going to hear them before September 29th. So this kind of lays out a timeline in which, you know, the absolute earliest the court hears arguments in this case is like, you know, just a tiny bit over a month before Election Day. So a lot of people are having conversations about, you know, what does that mean for the prospect of a ruling coming out that could put this purge in place if the court rules in favor of Will before November. And actually, in the dissent for the opinion, which we can get more into if you want, Justice Rebecca Bradley actually said, you know, this makes it pretty unlikely that we're going to rule before November. And she wasn't too happy about that.
Yeah. I mean, her take was basically, hey, there is this big, important election coming up. This decision could have a real impact on that election. Why are we waiting so long to make a decision on something that could have a big impact in the election?
Yeah, Justice Bradley has issued some really fiery dissents lately. She hasn't been happy with a number of the decisions the majority on the court has made in recent months. And this was definitely no exception to that. She cited the concept of justice delayed being justice denied. And she said that the court was really kind of being derelict in its duty to the people of Wisconsin by not quickly moving on this case. So she wasn't pulling any punches. She was really upset about the court not agreeing to move more quickly on this case. So it was certainly a contentious opinion. I think the other thing that's interesting to talk about is the makeup of the court is going to be different. If they, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. The timing has another wrinkle to it that has to do with the balance of power between conservatives and liberals on the court.
Yeah, so Justice Daniel Kelly, who has had a very complicated relationship with this case in particular, he had recused himself from weighing in on whether the court should take it because he was on the ballot in April, is not going to be on the court anymore after August 1st, because that's when Justice-elect Jill Karofsky takes the seat that he's currently in. So saying that the court's not going to hear arguments in this case until September 29th means that the partisan balance of the court is going from 5-2, with Dan Kelly still on the bench, to 4-3. So still a conservative majority, obviously, but it's narrowing that majority. And, you know, we never on this podcast, we try to be careful about, you know, speculation about how things are going to happen. But I think because this case has kind of, as it's moved through the system, followed typical party lines and party dynamics in terms of kind of arguments and where people fall on it, I think pointing out the partisan balance of the court is important here. And, you know, we could see a 4-3 ruling potentially on it. We could also see, with, you know, that gap between liberals and conservatives being narrowed from 5-2 to just 4-3, it would just take one conservative justice to flip if all the liberal justices, decide against the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty to turn this case the other way and to not have that voter purge go forward. We've seen some instances of that in recent months where conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn hasn't ruled with his conservative colleagues on things. So it's not completely outside the realm of possibility that we could have a 4-3 decision on this case that is a bipartisan decision that throws out Will's request. Of course, we could see it go any number of ways. There's my disclaimer. We'll just have to wait and see.
We know nothing.
Exactly.
Well, that seems like a good little mini explanation of some of these big decisions that came down this week. Lore Y is WPR's Cap Repo.
It really sounds like something from Star Trek. John K. Will is our resident Paul Pod Ner.
If you'd like to get new episodes of the Woofer Paul Pod, both small ones and more regular size ones, delivered to you almost every single week, all you have to do is subscribe. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And while you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And of course, you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.